Welcome to Handsome Boys Comics Hour. Hope you survive the experience.
Those boys are so handsome!
One writer.
One artist.
One weekly discussion of comics and nerd culture. I'm your host, Robbie Dorman, literature geek and writer.
And I'm your other host, Eric Z. Goodnight, professional artist and illustration nerd.
And we are the Handsome Boys Comics Hour, your home for news, reviews, slightly antagonistic banter, and much, much more. This is episode 33. How are you guys doing? Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, all those gratitudes, platitudes, all those things.
Was your Christmas the Christmassiest?
It was pretty Christmassy. I mean, it wasn't cold at all, but aside from that...
It was freezing on Christmas Day in North Kakalaki. I think the high was 27.
We got down into, like, the 40s, the high 40s.
Right. Most days it was around in the 40s, but Christmas Day and maybe the day before, it was freezing cold.
Freezing cold?
Freezing.
Oh, we just had normal Florida, not freezing cold weather at all.
Yes. I always like to tell people about how like older people always talk about that one winter in Florida when it snowed that one day.
Mm-hmm.
Like 30 years ago, 40 years ago.
We had one not too long ago.
What?
Up in, well, maybe not in Tampa, but up near where I was, in Leesburg, where I was working in Orlando, up near there, it was, it actually did briefly snow.
Are you talking about a flurry, or are you talking snow? Ten snowflakes is not a snow.
That's snow?
It is technically snow, but that is not... That doesn't really mean anything. It doesn't amount to nothing. Snow that flakes that fall and are melted in 2 minutes, that doesn't mean it snowed.
That means snow
fell. Yes, it is.
Okay, that's what I'm saying.
But do we really have to split hairs?
I think that's part of... We should just add that to the description of a podcast.
I think so. Hair splitting.
Splitting hairs.
It's only snow if it's the snowiest.
I don't make all these delineations between different types of... If snow falls from the sky, it snowed. Regardless of...
Robbie.
If it's 3 feet up in the air or if it melts when it hits the ground, it's still snow.
It still is snow, but it doesn't count.
What? Why do you get to decide that?
Because I'm from a place where it actually gets cold for more than 30 seconds.
Florida gets cold.
No, it doesn't. We just had a discussion about how it doesn't get cold.
It does, but not very much.
I'm pretty sure this is on the record. Because you're like, man, it doesn't get cold here.
A couple winters ago, it got really cold. I was working outside. I'm well aware of how cold it was. It was very cold.
It was like 35 degrees.
That's cold when you're outside for 4 hours in a row, isn't it? Doing work.
Jeez.
Man's labor.
Man's labor. I think we need to start checking in. That's a good segue for me.
Oh, that's true. You should go first because yours is much more interesting.
Yeah, mine's much more epic. We're going to talk about what did we get for Christmas?
Yeah, pretty much.
This will entertain you. For Christmas, I got a Crystal Art Deco whiskey decanter and tumblers to go with it.
That's nice.
I got a pen made out of a whiskey barrel.
Ooh.
And a farm.
I was waiting for the whiskey, but okay, farm.
No,
farm.
I didn't. No one bought me. My brother got whiskey, and I drank a lot of it over a game of Cards Against Humanity.
Ah, good.
My real win for the night was... it was the card where it says something about the M. Night Shyamalan twist.
Yes.
And the twist was Roadhead was licking things to say that you own them.
Lovely.
That was my favorite play of the night. It didn't win, though.
No.
But I felt very proud of myself. Anyway, I own a farm now.
Yes, where, how, why, when?
Well, the interesting thing about this farm is I was talking to my cousin, and I jointly own it with some other people in my family. And he said, I've been down there several times, but the first time I went there, I had to get directions because it doesn't have an address.
That's, strange.
Yes, it is a bit odd. There's no address. So I can't, it's not even really.
It's not a real place.
It is a dream farm.
Well, maybe you could get more if you some wine. And
anyway, it is a very worthless piece of land right now. Our goal is to try and clean it up, and we're going to grow trees.
Tree farm?
It's going to be a tree farm.
Okay. What kind of trees?
Probably pines, because they don't take 80 years to grow.
That's a good point.
Yes.
My 80-year investment finally paid off.
Now so. I'm dead 30 years ago.
My grandchildren will get to see the fruits of my labor.
I know. Nope. I say screw them with their awesome video games and
jetpacks.
Yeah, with their fucking jetpacks, man.
Robots.
Their jetpack robots.
Jetpack robots.
Their computers and their eyeballs,
or their fingertips.
The shit's pissing me off
already.
Goddamn grandchildren are spoiled.
Ones you don't have yet.
Kids these days,
in the future.
And the future kids, damn it, so spoiled. With all their MySpaces.
They literally have spaces.
They do.
You have a space now. It's a tree farm.
It is a tree farm. I'm going to be a tree farmer.
Are you going to be doing labor on it?
At some point, I'm sure I will. But right now, nothing's set in stone. The first steps, we're going to clean off all the brush and try and make it less shitty. Because it's pretty shitty right now.
Is there buildings there?
Yes, buildings that my grandfather, and actually the building that my grandfather was born in. But it is the crappiest house I've ever seen. I mean, it's not even like rustic. It's just, oh my God. It's rough. And it's full of garbage.
You need to call them the pickers.
No. There is nothing in here of value unless garbage is somehow, you know, worth its weight in gold. As it is not.
Not yet.
Because this is garbage.
It's not Waterworld yet.
No. No, good God. Anyway, my grandfather was crazy. And this house is full of garbage.
Okay. Are those connected?
Huh? Yes.
Those things are related?
Yes, because he's crazy and he kept garbage.
Okay. I know. There's a lot of people who do that.
Yeah, he was one of them. He's the garbagiest.
So you couldn't even tell me where your farm is, technically.
It is in South Carolina.
Okay, that narrows it down.
Yes, it is not on the moon. I'm not going to grow trees on the moon, although that would be awesome.
Can you give me a region?
Hmm?
Near a nearby major city? Nothing?
No. No, it's in the vast desert wasteland of South Carolina.
I wasn't aware that South Carolina had a desert wasteland.
It does. There's lots of cactuses on my farm. There literally are.
Okay. I like it. You can say that. My farm.
Mm-hmm. My farm.
You have a farm.
Where the bodies are buried.
Well, at least I know I have a place I can put bodies.
There is a body on my farm. There literally is a body.
Whose?
I don't know her. She was buried in 1934.
Jesus Christ.
This is all stuff this is real. This has happened. There's a body from 1934 on my farm.
We don't know who it is?
It had a name. She was married to someone. I don't know. They buried her.
Can't move the body.
We probably will and put it in a real plot. You know, not on the farm.
Isn't that like lots of paperwork?
It can't be that big a deal. But it's going to be what it's going to be.
Okay. Can I visit your farm?
If you want to.
Cool.
We can go, and my mom told me we should grow weed on it. Because my mom is also crazy.
That's good. You can go get arrested.
She said that's a growth industry. It's going to be legalized.
Well, as soon as it is, you then start. I wouldn't do it while it's still illegal.
I guess what I'm trying to say is it's been a pretty weird Christmas.
Okay. My Christmas present to you has not been sent to you yet.
Uh-oh. Oh, I sent you a Christmas present, didn't I?
Yeah, you did.
I did.
Through the interwebs. Magic of internets.
The magic. Steam is magic.
Steam is magic. I guess that's a good segue to my check-ins.
Your check-ins. Check-ems.
Yes, Steam. I have been on Steam for like the past 2 days, playing a game called Rogue Legacy. Kim had bought it and was playing it and was cursing loudly at her computer as she was playing it.
Wait, who's Kim?
Kim is a half dog, half cat that has resided with me since the day after Christmas.
Like a genetic experiment?
Kind of escaping from a shadowy,
like a business. Like a mad scientist and or engineer, genetic engineer.
Yeah, they're trying to breed a race of cat dogs.
That sounds like the cuddliest thing ever.
They're war machines.
Oh, okay, that's slightly less cuddly.
But anyway, she was playing it, and I said, is it worth $7.50? And she said, yes, absolutely. And she is right, because I may never... The only reason I stopped playing is because we're recording this podcast.
He'll just starve to death.
And I did pause to go to the grocery store and eat some lunch. But other than that, it's a roguelike, you know, it's kind of like a Binding of Isaac or Spelunky, where, you know, you go for a while, explore, and then die, and then start over. But the catch in this game is you're basically playing as your children, as your successors, as your ancestors, as you go on each one. And you have every time you get 3 kids to pick from, and then as you earn money, you spend it on upgrading all these characters, buying new classes, getting more health and armor and all kinds of stuff. And I would say you should play it, but you may never stop playing it.
I love not stopping.
It's so addictive. You just go one more game. I like it a lot more than other roguelike games that I've played, just because of the RPG elements. You know, you can level yourself up with the gold you earn, and you get these, and every character also has these weird, like, hereditary traits, like, that mess with the gameplay. Like, there's one is vertigo, the screen is upside down. You're playing upside down, literally. You are dyslexic. You can't read. All the text in the game is mixed up. You have you're afraid of chickens. You have fear of chickens. And because your food, whenever you attack something and food drops, it's a little chicken. At this point, it runs away from you and attacks you. You get nostalgia, so everything is sepia-toned. You get near vision, nearsighted and far-sighted, where you can only see the things, everything near you is fuzzy, or everything far away is fuzzy. There's also good traits too, like you're energetic, you move faster, or you have eidetic memory, so you can remember exactly where all the enemies and everything is. But it's so addictive, very light and fun and quick, and you can play it for 10 minutes or you can play it for 4 hours. And Kim and I did that exact same thing today. Literally, we were just in the same room, both on our computers, playing this game for hours. So, definitely try it. It's like $7.50 on Steam until as long as their winter sale is going on. And you could probably wait a week and get it again for even cheaper than that. There's always Steam sales. My other check-in is a PS3 game. I got it for Christmas. It's called The Last of Us. It's very, 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 very popular. Very well received, well regarded. Making tons of best of lists. I've been putting off getting it, but it's an amazing game. It is everything that Rogue Legacy is not. It's very, very tense and lots of character stuff and, beautiful and not 8-bit graphics and all that, but it's great game. I am a quarter of the way through, and I am constantly scrounging. It leaves you with constantly looking for more ammo and goods and all that. The combat's really hard. All the parasite infected people. There's one that is a one hit kills. They kill you with one hit if you let them get too close. And that has happened to me many times. But then, just as bad are the humans, the evil humans that are inevitably trying to rob, rape, or kill you, and they are also bad in a different way. But presents lots of interesting gameplay already, and I'm only maybe a quarter, not even a third of the way through the game. So I definitely suggest buying both of them.
You know what I got to play that I really enjoyed was Diablo for the Xbox 360.
Really?
Yeah, did you ever play around with it?
No.
It's a really good multiplayer game. I think I might get it for PC and probably play that with my brother over Battle.net or whatever Blizzard uses.
Yeah, I think it's Battle.net still.
It's pretty great. If I can get it on sale, I'll probably pick it up. There's an expansion coming out, so in theory, they're going to have the game on super sale soon.
Yeah. I've heard lots of complaints about 3, about how it's messed up. They messed up the formula from 2. I don't know.
The basic thing that really set a lot of people off is the marketplace.
Yeah.
They said it really ruined the feel of the game, but as a console game, it's really great. It was kind of meant to be played with a controller.
Have you played Path of Exile?
I have not.
That was PC Gamer's, I think, game of the year.
Path of Exile?
Yeah, it's free to play Diablo clone, basically.
Interesting.
And they say it's the stuff they do with a free game. It's incredible, they say. I want to try it, but, up to my ears in games now.
Yep. Up to your what's it in games?
Ears.
What's it?
My ears are not what's it's.
It depends on who you ask. I think they're what's it's.
You are. You're out of your element.
You're out of your element. You're the hootiest.
I thought owls were the hootiest.
No, just the owls where I'm from.
Okay. You and your owls, I just can't keep track of all these algorithms and formulas for your owls and how hooty they are.
Algorithms. Okay. Goodness, I'm sad.
That's
now.
Enough of checking in.
I'll have a lot of owls on my tree farm.
Probably will.
Do you know what I have a shitload of now is deer and wild pigs.
Aren't they dangerous?
Wild pigs? Yes, they are. So are deer.
Well, I wouldn't put myself in combat with either of them. I'm just,
no, I don't think I wouldn't want to like fight them with karate or something, but I don't know.
With karate. You wouldn't fight anyone with karate.
I would fight so many people with karate. If I knew karate.
You don't know karate.
My brother does.
That's not you. My brother can fight
them with karate. My brother is a brown belt in karate. So
okay,
there.
But you're not. You can't. Okay.
He's going to give me a lesson. You shut up.
I know people who have fighting skills as well. Let's watch them fight each other.
Oh, please. I can watch him for 5 minutes, and then I know karate. It'll just be like snowing for 30 seconds in Florida, and that's snowing.
That's not the same. That is a false metaphor.
That is a perfect comparison.
Your face is not a perfect.
Dude, want to try that again? That wasn't very good. That was a pretty bad burn.
Shut up.
So, seems like there were some comic books to be had at one point.
Yes, there were some comic books to be had at some point. We took a week off, so most of these books are a little older, but they're pretty good, so we should still talk about them. I'm going to touch on the only two notable releases from Christmas week. Anyway, most of the comic book companies put out almost nothing on Christmas because they didn't think they would.
Because Christmas.
Okay, we're going to start off Weekly Flabbies with Uncanny Avengers number 15.
I'm going to murder you and bury you on my tree farm.
My God. Written by Rick Remender, art by Steve Niven. John Dell with Dexter Vines and Jay Layston on ink. Laura Martin colors. Clayton Cowles letters. This is continuing the shitstorm of stuff happening with the Unity Squad facing off the Apocalypse Twins. Rogue's still dead.
Yeah, she's got a big X on her.
There's a big X, and like you see her like smoking corpse. Like,
yeah,
with some
Jesus
green...
Christ, I was right that it had like burned her up completely.
Yeah, and both Wonder Man and Scarlet Witch are both dead. But she did unleash her spell before she left. And they're now summoning all the mutants at the same time. The big giant, you know, eternal guy. What's his name?
I don't know. I think big giant eternal guy works.
Exitar the Executioner.
What the hell? That's the goofiest name.
It's a jet. I'm sure it's,
yes,
a jet.
Oh, of course. How amazing. How. Did you just, like, scream audibly when Sentry tore his face off?
I was like, what the fuck? Oh, my God.
I was freaking the hell out. I was like, I can't believe that just happened. He just tore his face off. He's eyeballs and a brain. It's like, yeah. That's so intense.
And then, yeah, Wasp is, like, trying to do battle with the Sentry. Sentry's just like, I'm going to rip my own head apart so that I have eyeballs and a brain, and I'm going to use my brain tendrils on you.
Yeah, no, that... Ooh.
But then Thor comes in, and then Sentry wipes the floor with him as well. And then, but then he gets eaten by one of those sandworms from Dune.
Yes. Paul Muad'Dib. A.K.A. The mayor of Portland.
The mayor of Portland?
In Portlandia.
Oh, I haven't watched that.
I think... I hope I'm right about that.
The Celestials are coming to town. They're upset with all the stuff that the Avengers and the Apocalypse Twins have been doing. So I guess they're going to kill the Earth. All at the same time as all these mutants are just vanishing. Going to the Ark. But the art's great. Again.
Yeah, Steve brings the heat. There's no denying that.
Especially when Sentry ripping his own face apart.
I have to say, that's what it looks like if a person was going to tear his own face off.
It's not even like his face. It's like his whole
head.
Yeah,
his skull.
His whole head is like gone.
He tears his skull off. Just like, bleh, and there's nothing left but brain and eyeballs.
And then he just reforms himself.
Because why not?
Well, he can. No one would recognize him. Like, which brain and eyeball are you?
I'm the best brain and eyeball.
But, I mean, it keeps up the action. The story is progressing very quickly now. We get some nice Uatu action as well. I love Uatu.
He points at stuff.
He points at stuff. That's in, he has big, giant, no eyes, and he points. That's really good.
This is the Earth and the universe just, like, in constant danger.
I think so, yeah, pretty much.
This is just, like, we're just so fucked.
We're about to, yeah, our planet's about, I mean, the big yellow and blue celestial is, like, has his thumbs down.
He does have his thumb down. I thought he was going to punch it. He's just like, thumbs down.
He has a big axe, probably.
That's so silly.
Yeah, it is.
He's got thumbs down with Kirby crackles coming out of it.
Well, you'd have to have Kirby crackles in there somewhere.
I mean, if you're like as tall as the Earth, some shit better be coming out of your thumb.
Exactly. That's, I mean, that, I agree.
It'd better crackle like nobody's business.
Tons of crackling. I love Uncanny Avengers. I love this issue. I'm a buy.
Yes, you might as well buy.
Might as well.
Yep.
What else are you going to do with your Christmas money?
I don't know. You could invest it in a tree farm.
Are you trying to push your tree farm to investors?
You can get it on the ground floor, Robbie.
How much? $5?
Sure, that'll buy me some bacon so I can fuel myself to plant trees. It's a paltry investment. You'll get back $5.25 in 30 years.
Oh, good.
That's some good growth.
It is. That's 25% growth. All right. Next up is Superior Spider-Man number 24. The continuing saga of Venom with Spider-Man, the Doc Ock Spidey. This is written by Dan Slott and Christos Gage, Humberto Ramos on pencils, Victor Olazaba on inks, Delgado, Fabella, and Candini on colors, and Chris Eliopoulos on letters. Did it one try that time. Boom, I got Chris Eliopoulos' name on demand.
I am so impressed.
Venom has taken over Doc Ock Spidey's body, and now he's like...
He's gone. Hissing out Superior.
Yeah, exactly. Flash has learned that he will die if he doesn't get the symbiote. He is now almost entirely relying on it to survive.
Thanks, Doc.
Yeah. But a lot of shit's hitting the fan, basically, at this point. You know, Mary Jane is, like, figuring out what the hell is wrong with Peter. Peter's screwing up, you know, going crazy on Aunt May. You got the goblins joining up to fight everybody. Peter's, you know, little person girlfriend is, you know, sad.
Yes. As she's wont to be.
I guess so. But Venom is obviously influencing Doc Ock negatively.
Making him crazy pants.
Even more crazy pants. And then we see the Avengers show up at the end. And they're to be concluded in their double-sized 25th issue extravaganza. But it's fun, it's good, it's quick. I mean, I don't...
I don't
like Humberto Ramos's art.
In my opinion, so much of this book is retarded, but I will say that they've succeeded in intriguing me in seeing what happens. Would you say you feel pretty similar?
Yeah. I am tied to this book as long as Venom is a part of it.
Yeah.
Because I feel connected to his story. I want to know what happens. And I do want Doc Ock Spidey to fail.
Yes.
So that also makes me want to read.
You're like the Tea Party, hoping that the Democrats fail.
Yeah, I'm buying it just to watch him fall apart.
Just to watch him crash and burn.
Pretty much.
So, this book, like everything in life, is Obama's fault. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, thanks, Obama.
Thanks, Obama. Fucking Spider-Man's ruined.
Yeah, exactly.
So where does that leave us?
I don't know.
On the scale of buy, don't buy.
I don't know. I'll say buy.
Buy-ish?
Buy it. It's I don't, again, Humberto Ramos has gotten better, you know, since, you know, over the years.
But he's better, but I still cannot stand his art at all.
No, I don't like it.
No, he's not my style. It's just doesn't do it for me.
People don't have as pointy chins as they used to do when he drew them.
People don't look like they're getting slapped in every panel, just in, like, you know, one out of every 10.
Exactly. So I guess that's a buy. Are you a buy?
I'm a buy with so many caveats that I'm pretty much a don't buy.
Okay.
I mean, I wouldn't recommend this book to anyone.
Mmm.
But I myself am intrigued.
Okay. I'm kind of in the same boat.
Yeah. So this is the most nuanced buy or don't buy scenario.
I think so.
It's so confusing. I don't know.
I'd say, you know, if you like Venom, you want to know what's happening to him.
Yeah, so, I think it's kind of a critical point. So I want to know more.
Yeah, me too. So I'm going to keep reading it. The extravaganza is the to be concluded, it says, but it's not going to be concluded.
So buy it, but don't like it.
Yeah, exactly. Buy it and hate it.
Yes, that's how things work in comics.
Exactly. We're going to move over to our indie books of the week, and I said indie books, plural. You may notice.
Mm-hmm. I caught it. I was impressed.
Yeah, exactly. We're going to start off with Pretty Deadly number 3, written by Kelly Sue DeConnick, art by Emma Rios, colors by Jody Belair, Clayton Cowles with lettering. And I love this book so much. I went back and reread 1, 2, and 3 in a row, and it's such an interesting portrait and story that it's building. This whole world is building. I'm still loving the art. You're getting more background information. All the pieces are coming together a little bit, giving you a better idea of how the characters are connected. I'm loving it.
I thought it was certainly very good, but it seemed like the whole first part of this book was, like, of book 3, was just, like, nothing. Like, it's the same couple that's been in bed since the first book. They're still in bed, and now a raven's talking to them, and we get to see some Wang.
Well,
and they're still... Jenny is still... That is her name, right? I'm not retarded.
No, that's her name.
Jenny is still exactly where she was. It's just a bunch of dawdling, and then it gets crazy awesome again. I mean, am I off base on this?
You can't have fast paced, like, continued movement the entire time.
I don't think it necessarily has to be, but I don't think it needs to. All these things need to be in the exact same set that they were on in, like, the past 2 books.
Well, that much time hasn't passed.
Well, I know, but it's the 3rd book. Not a whole lot's happened. We're getting a lot of exposition. I think it's got a lot of rich backstory, but I think 3 issues in, I just think we should be propelled along a little bit more in terms of, you know, it's saying a lot about who the characters are, and I think that's interesting, but not... I don't know. It's not altogether clear what they want and where things are going. Am I missing stuff, or it just seems like things are sort of sitting there?
No, I'm reading 1 through 3 in a row.
Mm-hmm.
There's clear motivations. I mean, I know exactly where Jenny's going. I know exactly why, you know, Fox and the little girl. What's her name?
Well, why don't you recount that?
Recount it?
Mm-hmm.
Like the whole summary of the story?
You can do it in a couple sentences. I don't think it needs to be all that much.
Well,
this is...
Fox fell in love with a woman. That's the story they're telling in the first issue.
Mm-hmm.
And the story that they were, you know, telling to the crowd. But he's telling his own story, which he continues in the end of this issue. But basically, yeah. He traps her in a tower because he doesn't want anyone else to access her. The devil comes and has a daughter with her. She dies. And the Fox tells the story to in the end of the story in this issue, where he, you know, digs down until he gets to Death, and he, you know, tries to strike a bargain with him, which is when he loses his eyesight, and he says, "Oh, if you go to this place, kill this girl, you'll get to see your love again, at least once in your life." But he can't do it. He can't end up killing the little girl. Ends up adopting her, which is the little girl he's telling a story to. And now Jenny, who is the daughter, is coming to kill him because he basically killed her mother. Now Death doesn't want that to happen. He's sending people to come get Jenny back to hell. Or Death. Death's cave. Whatever you want to call it. It's not hell. It's a place full of skeletons.
It's the 50th dead world.
Yes, whatever that means. But that's, I mean, and there's other players in it that aren't, you don't know the full story of, which is, I like. But but that's the plot.
Mm-hmm.
Other than, you know, there's the bunny and the butterfly, and then there's this coyote guy, the gunslinger, who stole the parchment that ignited all this action, you know, who's in bed. Who's Wang we see?
I do so love seeing Wang in my comic.
I know you do. Does that clear anything up?
I think it's a good recap. It sort of pieces it together a little bit more clearly for me, sure.
Well, that's why I went. I mean, I didn't understand. I wanted. It rewards you reading all of it together.
Mm-hmm.
Which is what I did. I read 1, 2, and 3. I read it all in one. I actually read both. I read all of them. Twice through.
Okay.
And I had a very clear picture of everything. I did it because it was fun. And it's a great, I'm really enjoying it.
You just didn't do it because you hated it.
No, I don't hate read this like the Spirit of Spider-Man. But the art's still great.
No, it's very good. I don't know, I still don't feel terribly different. I just feel like there's some issues with pacing of it, but I should probably give it a complete read through. I mean, it's still a very exciting book.
Yeah, if you can't tell, I'm a buy.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I am as well, but I don't know. I just think that there are just some things going on with the storytelling that are just a little bit strange.
Well, I think it's by design. This book is a little bit strange. How many horror, western, fantasy books are there?
A gazillion.
A gazillion?
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
That's many.
That is many. More than a few.
So, Eric hates it, but he still loves it.
Yes, that is a correct statement. I hate love it.
Hate love.
Mm-hmm.
But that's Pretty Deadly number 3. We're both buys.
Totally.
Totes.
Totes buy.
Next, we're doing Buzzkill number 4. So Eric gets to open up his favorite application.
Shut up. I hate it.
No, you don't. You love it.
I love this book. But I don't love this crappy Dark Horse app. Yes, I'm not a huge fan of this Dark Horse app.
It's pretty bad, honestly. It's Buzzkill number 4, plot by Donny Cates and Mark Register 6, script by Donny Cates, art by Jeff Shaw, colors by Lauren Effie. I don't know who did the letters, but regardless. We finally see the big showdown this book has been building to. And it's with the main character fighting his dad, who is where he inherited his powers from. And his father's a, you know, giant asshole who kills people for fun.
I mean, whose father isn't?
Mine's not.
You can't tell me your dad's never killed someone just because it was funny.
I don't think he has, actually.
Oh, wait. That actually is pretty unusual. So, hey.
Do you like this, Eric?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it would seem dumb to stop liking it, you know? I think that some of the most energetic artwork they've put in here, you know? It's all speed lines in action.
There is a lot of it in there.
Kicking ass and screaming at people. And Dr. Black getting his hands broken.
Yes, he does.
And he says, oh, dude.
Yeah, I'm honestly a little bit down on this issue.
Why is that?
It just gets a little sappy.
Mm-hmm.
And not, doesn't fit, I guess, the rest of the theme, the feel of this book. Like, most of this book is kind of irreverent, a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then it just started, the last issue got a little bit more serious, and then this issue is just complete tease, this guy dealing with father issues, and, you know, the thing where he's like, where is this, the scene where, what does he say? Oh, he tells his girlfriend that he loves her.
Mm-hmm.
And she asks what drug you're on.
Yep.
Weren't you paying attention?
Yep.
So we're telling him, so love makes him powerful.
Yep.
Love gives him powers.
Well,
ugh.
Yeah, it's corny, but this is the kind of story. It starts off really amazing premise, and it was intended to end after four issues.
Yes.
Even from the start, it sort of feels like... It feels like it's based on, and this is going to sound retarded, so bear with me, real-life experiences. Obviously, this guy doesn't get fucking superpowers, but, you know, this is written by someone, or at least inspired by someone who, you know, had this problem, and this is probably how they dealt with it, you know? So it probably, even though it's pretty corny, I'm sure it was very real to him. I didn't really see it going any other way. Unless he was just going to fucking die.
Yeah, that's... I don't know. That's kind of where I almost saw where he's going to sacrifice himself. But him, like, the ending where he's just floating around in space.
Yeah.
I'm just... I don't know. I expected more. More than him just going... Him beating his dad, and the end. I don't know. Something.
I honestly, it's pretty much exactly where my expectation was. So, I mean, after the last book, I sort of saw it going this way. You know, I wasn't expecting. It is kind of one of those books that sets a great expectation, and the ending can't possibly be as great or as artful as what your expectation of it is.
Yeah, I think that's probably my problem with it, is mm-hmm. that after the first couple issues, I'm like, wow, this is very fresh. You know, this is very interesting. And this is just kind of back to some, like, tired tropes
mm-hmm.
that I've seen before. I mean, it's still executed very well. The art is still great. And, like you said, energetic.
Mm-hmm.
And full of action. And emotion. And, I mean, the characters are still, you know, good? But it's just, you know, hero wins, the end.
Right.
I wanted something. And it's still, I still say bye. It's still read this entire series. It's very good.
Yeah.
But I'm curious to see if they're going to do another, either do an ongoing or another mini later on. Because it's definitely there. I do like the crazy artwork of Dr. Black at the end.
Mm-hmm. It doesn't make a lot of sense.
No, it doesn't. It makes no sense.
It's like a child's drawing. It's kind of amazing.
I think it's fan art.
Yeah. He's got a shitload of hair on his neck.
See, it says, and then at the end it says, that's it from Team Buzzkill for now. So, there may be more in the future. But, I'm still a buy. I'm just kind of a little lower on it than I was. Even until the last issue, I thought it was, you know, something go out a little bit more of a bang than this.
I think if your expectation is appropriately managed, you won't be like cutting yourself afterwards.
No, it's still decent. It's still fine. It's just standard.
Right.
Standard ending, at least. So, I'm a buy. You're a buy, I assume, as well.
Yeah, why not buy that book? Why not?
Well, I think the why not is money. Like, everything costs money, and most people have, like, a limited supply of it.
Oh, please.
What do you mean, oh, please?
Where, you know, you have a problem with money, start up a tree farm.
You are really selling this tree farm idea.
You have no idea.
Ooh.
I don't know what that interaction just meant. What's happening?
I don't know. We're going to move on to DC Books of the Week. Starting off with Animal Man, number 26, written by Jeff Lemire. With art by Colley Hamner, colors Dave McKeag, letters Jerry K. Fletcher, covered by Raphael Albuquerque. And this is seeing Buddy on this crazy alien planet where he's doing battle with this giant thing and then has to talk with this apparently mystical guy who is like in control of all the Reds in the entire world, like the entire universe.
Mm-hmm.
He's the seed planet. He looks over this planet, and now they want Buddy to do it. And Buddy agrees, but only if he gets to save his family. This is not where I was expecting it to go.
You weren't expecting Animal Man to become Green Lantern?
No, I was not, actually.
It is a little strange, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, I really enjoy the action and him like trying to communicate with these other aliens on this planet, and then dealing battle with this giant being, looks like a Kirby alien, or a monster.
A Kirby alien monster.
Yeah, one of those things. You know, I liked it. It's fun. It's good. It's a little diversion from the nonstop horror of, you know, the Chimera monsters and Brother Blood just like ruthlessly murdering.
It really does feel like just sort of out of left field, though, doesn't it?
I think it's just a setup for future stuff.
I guess.
And to give, like, a route to the red and the green and all that over the entire universe.
It's wacky that it's coming back to aliens.
Yeah.
That was one of the first things that I thought is, you know, well, now we have to have aliens with magic powers. I don't know. I guess it's just sort of the Animal Man tradition, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Jeff Lemire has already announced that Animal Man's gonna 29 is gonna be the last issue. So it's three more issues.
So wacky.
And then he's gonna be in the Justice League Canada book.
He's Canadian?
I don't think you have to be Canadian to be in the Canadian Justice League.
Well, it seems like it would help.
I don't know. All I'm saying is that Jeff Lemire is going to be writing the Justice League Canada book, and he's going to have Buddy Baker in it.
Is Jeff Lemire Canadian?
I don't know. You have a lot of questions about Canada.
Well, you know,
I can't answer them.
They're also tree farmers.
Some of them, I'm sure there are.
Yeah. Where do you think all that syrup comes from?
Oh my God. You're fucking ridiculous.
And you love it.
Yeah. But it's a new artist. I don't think it fits as well as Raphael Albuquerque's art did. But it's still, you know, good. What do you think, Eric?
I enjoyed it very much. Yeah, I don't really see any complaint about it. I think it works really well.
Yeah.
You know, it's Cully Hamner is not Raphael Albuquerque, but it's a well-drawn book. You know, I don't know what your beef is with him.
I don't have a beef.
You're beefing with the Hamner.
I am not beefing. I said it was good, not as good as Albuquerque, but still good.
Them's fighting words.
It's fighting words to who? You're just trying to cause some squabbles or something for no reason at all.
I think that's you. You're the one talking shit here.
I'm not talking. You're talking shit.
You're talking shit.
You're talking shit.
You're talking shit. Yeah.
I'm going to buy this book. You should buy it.
Yeah, I'm going to buy too. I like Animal Man. Mm-hmm. I like
Green Lantern in space, Animal Man.
It's kind of interesting. He'll be back. He's back to his.
He also pulled off his face.
I don't think he pulled it off. The pill did it. The space pill.
Space pill.
It like made him melt into the red.
It's a god seed.
We're just too many death and life and god seeds coming around.
I know.
Dangerous. But anyway, we're both buys. So go buy it.
Totally buy it.
We're telling you to go buy Animal Man number 26. Buy all the Animal Mans.
Animal Nam.
Animal Mans.
It's the best.
It is. It's good. Lastly in DC this week is Harley Quinn number 1. Written by Amanda Connor and Jimmy Palmiotti. Chad Harden is the artist. Alex Sinclair is on colors. And John J. Hill on letters. Eric, what do you think about this book?
I enjoyed it a lot more than I thought I was going to. That being said, it is dumber than hell. Oh my god, it is so dumb. But it is an enjoyable read. I mean, you don't pick up a Harley Quinn book because it's going to be great literature.
Yeah.
You pick it up because it's going to be this.
Yeah, pretty much.
Harley Quinn hanging out with short dudes that look like Jack Black and murdering people for no reason and doing roller derby, I guess. Why not?
I don't know. Yeah, I'm right there with you. I enjoy this a lot more than I expected to hate this book.
Mm-hmm.
But it was very stupid, but fun. Some of it was a little too dumb for me to enjoy, but some of it was also, you know.
By some of it, you mean all of it?
No, not all of it. I enjoyed most of it, but there's, you know, just the way Harley Quinn talks sometimes just annoys me. But, you know, I don't know how she just pops a guy's head off with her hammer, a mallet, whatever. Drags. I'm assuming the guy that was dragging the dog is now dead.
Well, maybe he'll regrow his head.
I think both those people are dead. And I am all against animal cruelty. I don't think that man deserved to die for dragging his dog by a collar.
It's a book. It's done in just, it's heavy-handed and stupid.
It is.
You know, I don't think you're really supposed to think about it.
I guess not.
You're just like, oh, it's tough, the Harley Quinn. She's doing roller derby in her underwear.
And she's in a circus.
Yeah.
Things are happening.
Oh my god, she popped that guy's head off with a hammer.
Yeah, it's a... I want to say every bit of it is fan wanky, and if that's what you're after, then, you know, it works, I think.
What do you think about the art?
It's pretty good. You know, it's not my favorite. It doesn't look like Jim Lee.
That's true.
And I don't know. It's cute and it's fun, and I think it tells the story. It doesn't excite me, but it manages not to disgust me. This was a book that I was intending to just be completely disgusted with, and I enjoyed it for what it is. I think I like Amanda Connor's cover more than the interior, even though I think the interior is... they're on the same quality level. I think I just like Amanda Connor better than this guy.
Yeah, I agree with you. I wish she had, was drawing this as well as writing it.
Yeah. Well, I think you can only do so much.
It's very true.
She's, to my understanding, a pretty hard-working woman.
I have a question. Harley Quinn has a... what looks to be like a beaver on the front of her motorcycle.
I was really wondering where you were going with that.
And it is talking. Is this actually talking, or is it just, you know, in Harley Quinn's head?
I don't think I'm qualified to answer questions about Harley Quinn's beaver.
Tell me that's not a beaver. What else is it if it's not that?
You know, some of us, we just got to call a beaver a beaver.
But
that's a beaver.
It's talking. Is it actually talk? Is it sentient? I just have some questions. I'm just, you know.
Hey, I don't claim to be a talking beaver expert.
Okay, we've taken this joke far enough.
Can we bring back Boneville jokes now?
It's probably best not to. But I am a reluctant buy on this. I'd say buy it, try it out, see how you feel.
I think people that... I think this has its audience already cut out for it. If you're kind of on the fence, check it out. That's my thought on it. That's my nuanced buy. I had fun reading it. It is as stupid as you might have ever thought, and that's kind of the point.
Yeah, so, it's meant to be a light book.
Yeah, it's except that people are getting their heads hammered off.
Yeah, except that, and getting dragged on the road to death because they walk their dog incorrectly.
Mm-hmm.
So we are both guys with caveats on Harley Quinn number one. You want to call it that?
That's it. It's a nuanced buy.
We're very nuanced here. Super nuanced.
So nuancey.
I do want to check in with a few other books that I have read and Eric did not read.
I suddenly became illiterate.
Well, you were busy farming.
I was busy farming.
One is Avengers number 24, which is basically, it's renumbered number one. I don't know if they're going to stick with that. I know it has it's a very weird numbering, because it's both 24 and number one. But it's basically just kind of a reset after Infinity. They're kind of partying, you know, and then Captain America and Tony are having discussion about the nature of their program, what they're going to do with it. But then you're getting some time travel shenanigans, and it's a one book story. It's totally encapsulated in this one story. So if you have been reading Avengers, definitely pick it up. It's a very kind of fan service issue. Thor is barbecuing. I don't know what else to say. Thor barbecues veggie burgers. Okay?
That's a statement.
That is something. The other book I read this week, just for being for fairness, I would not read this on my own, but, you know, I'm a servant of the people. I read Forever Evil number 4. Like all the other Forever Evil books, it is fucking retarded. Alright, I don't know what to say about that. Don't buy it. I'm done with Forever Evil. We're not reading it. I've given it a fucking good shot, alright? I've read probably 6-7 issues in the event. I am done with this bullshit, alright? We'll start reading Forever Evil tie-in books. Never, alright? We're done with it. we're going to read Animal Man, we're going to read Lara Flees, we're going to read Green Lantern books, everything that's not connected to Forever Evil, because it is stupid, all right? It is contrite, contrived, stupid bullshit. Geoff Johns, I don't know what the hell happened to him since when after Sinestro is in. You know what the end of this book is? Sinestro pops up after Batman is fighting the fucking evil Green Lantern with his own power ring. And then it runs out of juice, and then Sinestro shows up for some fucking reason. Why is Sinestro in this book? Lex Luthor is with Project B-Zero and a whole bunch of other B-list villains also doing the same bullshit. And they, oh, it's Batman. Oh, it's Lex Luthor. Oh, they're confronting each other. And then there's evil Green Lantern and Sinestro. Let's throw every fucking thing at the wall at once and then see what sticks. It's fucking terrible. Do not read this ever.
So, I guess I'm not going to read it then.
Good. Thank you for taking my advice.
It sounds passionate.
It's fucking terrible. It makes me so angry. It's so bad.
Clearly it makes you angry. That was like the most amazing rant I've ever heard from you.
It's awful, all right? We're done with Forever Evil, Eric. You never have to read any of that stupid shit again.
Admittedly, it has been pretty fucking dumb.
It's just as bad. We get the Batman showing Catwoman the Batcave scene. How many times have you seen that scene in comic books?
Personally, I have not. If I had seen that one, I might.
I've seen it enough times, all
right? Right.
The whole Batman confiding, oh, look, this is something, blah, blah, blah. I don't care anymore. It means nothing. Why is Batman is running around this entire issue, half his mask is gone. Half. You see half of his face.
To be fair, it's possible that the other half of his face is not Bruce Wayne.
I don't guess not. I guess everyone, Lex Luthor, who is a... How many billionaires... How many billionaires do you think there are in the DC universe?
I think like, Richard Branson.
As many as there are in our universe, so maybe less than 100, right?
Right.
It's probably, you know, everyone else in the club.
Yes.
Especially ones that live, you know, within 100 miles of each other. And do business with each other regularly. Bruce Wayne does business with Lex Luthor. You're telling me Lex Luthor doesn't see Batman? Half his face is showing, doesn't go, hey, that's fucking Bruce Wayne!
Yeah, for a super genius.
He cloned Superman. He can't recognize Bruce Wayne when he's 3 feet away from him? It's fucking stupidest shit. God.
How's your blood pressure?
It's feeling pretty good, actually. Get it pumping. We're gonna get out. Okay, we're done with the weekly floppies.
We're done for our weekly flip out.
The weekly flip out.
Jesus Christ.
We are finishing up the Sandman retrospective this week, a Nerdbug Book Club. Sandman's volume 9 and 10. 9 is the Conley ones. 10 is The Wake?
The Wake. None of them are Game of You.
None of them are Game of You still. So, Eric, we'll start off with the Conley ones. I know this is your favorite, right?
It is absolutely my favorite. This is the other one of the books that I have signed by Neil Gaiman's Silver Hand.
Is his hand made out of silver?
It is. Oh. He's like a Lannister.
Ooh, I see.
Yeah, except silver. Alan Moore cut off his hand so he could write better.
That's quite a story.
Yeah, it's plausible because you actually can imagine Alan Moore
cutting people's hands.
Yes, and now you can write better.
I have helped you out there, Mr. Gaiman. You're welcome.
Yes.
That one's better.
just it's hard to really describe my feelings about The Kindly Ones. Rereading it was, it felt a lot the same as my previous reads. It's just pretty incredible the way that that the plot is laid out and how it's very clear it's going what it's going towards, but it still feels so natural and character driven. It's pretty beautiful that way.
Can you sum up the plot?
You know, I'll do my best. It's driven by Leta Hall, and her son is kidnapped, and it's later revealed that he was kidnapped by Loki and by Robin Goodfellow in an attempt to antagonize Dream, and this basically sets off the Kindly Ones coming after Dream as an act of revenge for killing his old son, for killing his own son and settle the blood debt. And it eventually leads Dream to having to make a choice of, can I change who I am and abandon the dreaming and let it be destroyed in order to save my own life, or do I die and, you know, do I move on and let a new Dream of the Endless take my place? And ultimately he can't change and he dies. And it's, I don't know, it's pretty fascinating. And you can say that's a spoiler.
But
at this point, it's pretty clear where the story's going.
Yeah, it's, I mean, at the end of World's End, you see a funeral procession.
Yeah.
Without Morpheus in it.
Yes.
So what else would it be?
It's pretty clear that the Sandman is a tragedy. And it's pretty clear everything is telegraphing to this point. And by the way, you're supposed to be reading along. That's the way book clubs work. What's wrong with you? This isn't some kind of passive podcast.
Have you been getting angry emails?
I hope so. I read them by the fireplace.
It ties together a dozen or so characters that mm-hmm. all have been introduced throughout the series.
Yeah.
And puts them all together in this plot that ends up with Morpheus making that choice.
Mm-hmm.
It's quite involved, quite interesting. You say it hasn't changed in your estimation,
right?
From this read to the last,
still feels very rich and just. It's still my favorite. It's still wonderful, and I think, I don't know, I want to say that the language, the way it's written, there's a lot of opportunity for Gaiman to be super hokey, or to be, you know, to be the worst of Gaiman, to write the purple prose that he was writing in book one. And I think what he's written in this case is a lot more effective, and it feels a lot more artful. Or maybe I'm just drinking the Kool-Aid, I don't know. But this is a book that I read over and over again, and I can't get enough of it.
Yeah, I enjoyed it for sure. I don't want to say that I don't like it, because I do like it. Some of it seems, it's very long.
Mm-hmm.
It's 13 issues.
Mm-hmm.
For one. I don't know if it could, if it, that, I think that's the dilemma I have, is if, would it be more or less impactful if he was made it tighter? And I'm not sure. Because I don't think everything in this, it certainly adds background.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of it was, is necessary, you know, to have the character insights and all that. But, I don't know. The weird thing with Rose and, you know, one of the spider ladies.
Right.
I don't understand how that is supposed to tie in with this, the story of Morpheus.
Well, it's just sort of the overall theme of dealing with all this death.
Yeah.
That's really just all it is, that and tying up some loose ends of these characters. It's more or less these characters sort of reappear as a motif in the larger story of Morpheus.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, I think that's my other complaint, is that this story is about, you know, the tragedy of Morpheus. I just wanted to see more of him.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, my favorite issue in this arc is just the one, the last one, where he's just talking to his sister and explaining, you know, how he feels and why all this is happening. But I think that would also be my, we can also discuss this later, but my main complaint with the series as a whole is not of Morpheus.
I think that it might have even been done sort of by design, exactly what you're saying in this, this arc. Just sort of so that it makes the ending more poignant, you know? That he says, he doesn't get to say a whole lot in the book, but when he does, I mean, you really feel it. And I feel like that was important for him to be as central as it was in that issue, and for it to mirror the earlier issue in, what was it? It was in book one. It was in book one. I don't know. I don't really have a big problem with that. To me, it's just always sort of been, it's just always sort of been those kind of stories that, that these are, where we read about stories in the Sandman's world, not just about him.
Yeah, I know. I just, if you want me to, you know,
no,
feel.
No, it's a perfectly valid thing to say.
If he wants me to feel for the character, I, because when he is there, when he is talking, he becomes very empathetic about his inability to change. You know, you feel for him, you feel bad. You see, like, with the dedication, he puts himself to his job, basically. But there's so a lot of this where he's not there at all, and you're just watching these characters, which I don't care about as much, and I don't know. I still enjoyed it a lot, and I wish they would have. I don't. Since it, I mean, I knew that what was going to happen. It's obvious he's going to die.
Mm-hmm.
I wish they. It seems like. Before this argument starts, you see at the end of the World's End, you see, you know, it's basically saying, you know, Morpheus is dead. Here is his funeral wake. It seems like he's playing coy with all of this. Like, we know he's going to die. Is it necessary to go on all the nuts and bolts of it? I don't know.
Hmm.
Like, you know, we know he's dying. And you can still set up the tragedy, you know, of his tragic flaw, his inability to change, without going through this whole thing about, you know, just, I think it would have been more effective if he was, I don't know, I think it's this, it's asked at one point is if Morpheus is doing this, like, he wants to die. I mean, at the last issue, he's like, I'm tired. Do you think, does he actually want to die?
I mean, it's entirely possible.
I mean,
you know, after Orpheus.
Yeah,
it just weighed on him so much.
It's a question that's raised, and I'm not sure if it's necessarily even important, because I think it's still, because they bring up multiple points where he could have done something. And I don't know if that's emblematic of his flaw, or if that's just emblematic of him not just wanting to rest, to stop.
It's possible. You mean like when he came to Nuala? Yes. He could have just easily have not done that.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the things.
Mm-hmm.
The main that's glaring.
Yeah, I mean, it's just in his character that it was a promise that he made, and he had to keep it. Had to, by his own rules.
Yeah.
I see where you're coming from. I mean, he was effectively a suicide. The kindly ones did not kill him.
Right.
He just, you know, sister, I'm ready to go, and blam.
Yeah.
He's gone.
What do you think about the art in this?
I absolutely adore Mark Hempel. He does most of this book. There's some Charles Vess, and there's one sort of interlude issue by another artist. Seems like there's other stuff interspersed in there, too. But those are the ones that stick out to me. But I adore Mark Hempel. I think I had discovered him just before I found this book, and tried to track down as much of his art as I could afterwards. It's that, I don't know, almost, you call it Art Deco, heavy shadows.
Yeah.
Really clever line work, and just really nicely designed images. I don't know, he's a very cool artist, and that it's one of my favorite things about this book, is his artwork, and just the fun design of the panels. What's your take on it?
No, I like it. I just...
You don't seem to have too many strong feelings about it, then.
No, I mean, it's... He's certainly an excellent artist. This is not the art... The art... I don't know. When I think of Sandman, this is not the style I think of. I think it's interesting that this is your favorite, and this is definitely, certainly not, I mean, like you said, Art Deco style and stuff like that, which is it's very good, and he does an excellent job. It's not emblematic of this series, I guess. Or at least what thematically this series represents.
Well, to me, it's, you know, the characters are big and bold, and that's always fit for me.
That's true.
You know? Gods and big ideas, beings that have existed for billions of years. It meshes for me, and I think compare it to, like, the Michael Zulli artwork in the next book. Is that more the kind of look that you expect?
Yes.
Is that more congruous with what you think about the Sandman?
Yes, that's exactly what I was going to say.
And Michael Zulli's done a couple of odd issues already in the Sandman, but this is easily his best work in the series because there's no anchor coming behind him to crap it up. It was just pencil and Photoshop, and it's got a beautiful, subtle effect. How did you feel about the weight compared to the kindly ones, then? Because you don't seem...
I like the kindly ones. The wake is fine as well. It's just kind of rote at this point. It's just like, what's propelling the action of this book now?
Mm-hmm.
Morpheus is dead. He was ostensibly the main character. So now it's just wrapping up loose ends, seeing all these people paraded again in the, you know, in the funeral, seeing what they're up to. It just seems unnecessary. It felt like in the last Lord of the Rings movie?
Mm-hmm.
Where they say goodbye.
Yes.
And then they say goodbye. Yes. And then they say goodbye. Yeah, I got it. Yes, okay. I mean, it's it's still lovely. It's nice. And I mean, people who love these characters, I'm sure they love this. A lot of these characters, I mean, some of them I am interested in. Some of them, I don't care. Why we have to parade, we have to go 5 issues of them parading 3 guys that, oh, look, it's these 3 characters in this story that they've been met. Let's have them sit next to each other and talk to each other in a dream.
I think you've really hit on it at this point after reading 10 books about Morpheus and this character that you've invested in. I don't know. When I read it, it was really painful and poignant. And, you know, you're saying goodbye to this character. I had spent a long time reading over these books. You know? Most people don't read it in, what, 5 weeks?
Yep. I'm not saying don't show a funeral, but there's the scene, there's one of these books, is it the Tempest? It's the last issue, mm-hmm. where it's just following Shakespeare around?
Yeah. Honestly, I've never really... I often skip most of those 2 stories.
That's what I'm saying.
As interesting as I find them, I just...
I mean, there's 6 issues. That's a third of the...
Mm-hmm.
And they're just kind of, why are you telling these stories? Just, to get to an even number, and Exiles is barely, it's just, you know, art with a whole bunch of text overlaid over it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
It did have one of my favorite quotes in the whole series at the end, and I thought it was a nice note to end on. Everything changes and nothing is truly lost.
Yeah, I felt like that last issue, the last scene with Morpheus, with him and his sister, I felt that was perfect.
Mm-hmm.
That issue where he's talking to Matthew, he's saying his goodbyes, basically, to all these characters. And then finally he sits down and talks to his sister. I thought that was great. And you see these torment and the pain, and then he's gone. It just seems like it makes that less impactful by having all this stuff afterwards. It's like they hit a climax, and then the denouement goes on forever. You just don't even, it doesn't have the same hit.
I don't know that I particularly agree with that. I mean, I'm feeling very different things, you know, in one verse to the other. To me, the ending of The Kindly Ones is effective in and of itself. And I don't know, The Wake is, you know, it's setting up Daniel.
Yeah.
It's the scene, I thought the scene with Daniel and Destruction was really excellent. And it's not just saying goodbye to this, but it is sort of showing about how in sort of dying Morpheus was able to change, if that makes sense. And just sort of showing where things are landing. I mean, You can end it right there at the resolution, but I know that this had a huge following at this point. There were too many unresolved questions for this to have just stopped right there.
I'm not saying I don't know. I would have, or it just, I was reading The Wake, mm-hmm. and I'm just going, what? What is happening? Why is this? It just continuing on and on and on about goodbye, 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 goodbye. It just doesn't make me feel sad or make me feel about anything about Morpheus. It makes me feel like I don't. Are we continuing this series? Why? If it's the ending, I don't. I guess they wanted to leave it on a happy note. But tragedies don't do that. Tragedies are, I mean, Hamlet is a tragedy. It ends with everyone dying, and then it's over. I'm just drawing really on the Shakespearean origin of, I mean, the classic meaning of tragedy, which I read a lot of them, and it's supposed to be brutal. It's supposed to be like, this is, look at the horror, look at how awful this is. And I felt that at the end of the Conley ones. I felt bad for Morpheus. Mm-hmm. But then you get all this, it felt like fan service. It felt like, look at all these characters. You're not, if it's tragedy, it shouldn't be, there should not be happy resolution. You shouldn't go, oh, well, at least we know these guys are continuing on. Daniel's set up as the new, Dream Lord, whatever you want to call him. You know, and all these characters, we get to see them interact the last time and all this. It's too happy.
So that's, you actually said that. You actually said that phrase. Oh my God. So your complaint is that it's not miserable enough?
Yeah, I think so.
All right.
It's not a tragedy to me if with all that. I can understand Awake. That's fine. But I don't think he commits enough. Like, the Conley ones, it accelerates perfectly, building this feeling of dread and sorrow as you're going. Like, you know what's happening. You know that Morpheus is going to die. And it's still, you're like, you, and it's building and building and building as things are falling apart. And then finally, you see...
So what is your alternate ending to the Sandman? Is it the Conley ones destroying the dreaming?
No.
And everything that dreams in the universe dies? I don't understand how it goes a different way.
No, Morpheus is dead, correct? Mm-hmm. He dies.
Yes.
The last issue of the Conley ones. If you need an actual... I don't know what the alternate ending is. But it certainly is not them all walking off into the sunset. If you want to sell a tragedy, then commit. That not everyone has to die. I'm just saying, to have Morpheus die in this huge moment where he is either gives up or is stuck in this flaw where he can't change... Don't call it a tragedy and then go the opposite direction. Like, that's the whole thing. They say always comedies end in weddings, tragedies end in funerals. And I don't say I wouldn't end a funeral and not end in a funeral. It makes perfect sense to have the funeral to show it. But there's a lot of scenes in it where it's just like, here's these characters that we saw a little bit of, like, in the fourth volume. Let's have them sit and talk to another character that they haven't met before, but is also in the comic book series. It's like, you remember in Captain Marvel, that issue where Thor shows up and you don't know why?
Mm-hmm.
It felt like that. Where, I mean, I
and
just...
To me, I said it already, these characters are more just sort of the motifs in Morpheus's story. To me, it's never not occurred to me that they wouldn't sort of appear. I understand your complaint about it being fan servicey because it kind of is at this point. I mean, this book is for no one except people that read everything else and liked it. No one there would be no reason to read The Wake unless you read the other 9 books and liked it. This would be a terrible book to read on its own.
I think that's a problem. Like, I don't... It just... It's more... It's... It feels... like a DVD extra. Or downloadable content.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't feel like it's a part of the story. It feels like, here's something extra to make you feel happy about yourself if you love The Sandman. Like, felt like, I don't know if you played it, Mass Effect 3 DLC, The Citadel.
I knew exactly that's what you were going to bring up.
Well, yeah, because it's, I mean, like, all the characters show up. You know, it's a callback to happier times. They do, you know, things that all the Mass Effect fans like. It's a lot of little... And it felt the same to me. And, I mean, it's not bad, but I don't think it's necessary. I love the art. I mean, that is, of all the artists, this is my favorite. In the Wake. In this, and like you said, this is what I think of when I think of, like, Sandman art. Like, the art style. Think of this. It's gorgeous. I just don't... It feels like an add-on.
And I really don't see how it could have ended any other way. I don't know. I think that's really an interesting perspective. I just really strongly disagree. I don't know. I don't know where else to leave it. I think there's a lot of really fascinating stuff, and even though that he's dead, we're exploring even deeper into what the Endless are, and it's just more of the same, of just reoccurring motifs of these characters appearing again and again. To me, it feels like the logical extension of the story. And I've always loved it. It still hits the same notes for me. I don't know.
Would you ever read The Wake by itself?
No. Typically, I read The Kindly Ones and then I read The Wake.
Yeah.
It doesn't make sense to read The Wake by itself unless there's something in there specifically I'm looking for. Like, if I'm thinking about the scene where they create, like, I'm like, what was that character's name? Oh, yeah, it was Elblis O'Shaughnessy. And they drew a heart on him and he goes into the catacomb to find the sacraments or whatever they're called. That would be like the only reason I would flip through it.
Yes.
But typically, I mean, I read them sort of as one volume. If I read The Kindly Ones, typically I read The Wake afterwards. I definitely agree with you that the last two stories are like DVD extras.
Yeah, I don't know why they're here.
Well, what issues do they cover? Where does it say that? Was that the last two issues? Those the last two issues?
Yes, 74 and 75. The last issue is the Shakespeare one. Which, again, that even makes it less... you go through Morpheus' death, and then his funeral, and then an issue about a guy lost in the desert, and an issue about Shakespeare.
Right.
I don't...
No, admittedly, I could have done without those two issues.
But, I don't know. Thoughts on it as a whole, Eric?
As a whole, it's just sort of interesting to see, you know, how the series developed, how the production values of it developed, how Neil Gaiman as an artist developed. That it really it was sort of written by the seat of his pants, it feels like, and then a lot of things started to gel and come up to this, and I feel like, considering the way it began, for me at least, it ended very artfully. It almost seems like it was planned, even though it, looking at the earlier books, it pretty clearly was not.
No, I think it took him a bit before he got a direction.
He was really figuring things out for quite some time.
I think until Season of Mists, honestly. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think my largest problem in it as a whole is just the inconsistency in the art style and artists in general. I mean, how many artists have worked on... I mean, 75 issues, how many artists worked on it over that span?
Oh, a fair few.
Yeah. I mean, I certainly don't expect one artist to draw on it the entire thing. But and especially, it, not even necessarily even the artist, but, you know, the things we pointed out as we went, the mm-hmm. poor inking and coloring that really brought the quality of the art down. Neil Gaiman was certainly finding his voice for a good length of the comic, although it's hard to, he's created all these characters and many of them are very, I mean, you think of comic book characters, the, you know, Morpheus and Death are two of the ones that are, you know, think of classic comic book characters, respectable ones, not superheroes.
Mm-hmm.
That's what you come up with. Or name a comic book series that, you know, you're allowed to read as an adult, quote unquote.
Yeah, I would say all of them, but...
Yeah, I understand. I'm just, you know... It's one of the respectable series. How many absolute volumes are there and collections and all that?
Mm-hmm.
They just keep re-releasing it because people keep buying it.
Eh, why not?
I'm glad I read it. I liked it. I think its main fault is the fact that Neil Gaiman didn't find his voice... Didn't have, like, have a plan until, like, you know, three or four in there. And then he kind of righted, put his ship on the steady course.
Mm-hmm.
But up until that point, it was kind of, you know, inconsistent. You don't know where it was happening. Do you think this would be stronger if those little short stories weren't in the Sandman? Like, all those, you know, the three volumes with, you know, various tales that are not revisited? Yeah, like they were replaced by other stories of Morpheus and the Endless.
Which ones do you mean? Can you just give me one as an example? You don't got to name them all.
The one that pops off the top of my head is the one in the desert, the Ramadan, where the guy, you know, goes, the Sultan makes the deal with
I would not want to.
That's just an example. There's a multitude of them.
That story in particular, I would not want to read The Sandman without them. That one, I feel, is a very important one. I feel like it's one of the most effective ones. I feel like there are some like that that are not as effective. But...
I think that it's just... He spends a lot of time in this series exploring ancillary characters...
Mm-hmm.
Or characters you never even see ever again. And you don't get a good handle on Morpheus' character until probably Season of Mists. I think it's that until that point, I didn't feel as much of a connection to him as you do after that point. After that point, he starts becoming like a real character. He like as you know fully formed. Mm-hmm. Before that, it's kind of inconsistent, and you don't barely get into it before he's exploring, you know, these other characters that are not, you have no idea how they're related to Morpheus at all. I'm just curious if you think that if there were more stories like Season of Mist, like, why can't I think of the name of it?
You're talking Brief Lives.
Yeah, that one. More like those.
If there was more content like that, I mean, I would welcome it. I still feel like you adequately get a good understanding enough of Morpheus, and that, I think that maybe that is kind of why these last two books are so poignant for me. Is you are left wanting more. You get to the end and you're like, shit, there's no more Morpheus. I was just really starting to enjoy him. I think that's why it's always worked. And I have thought that before, but it wasn't until you asked that question that I was able to articulate it again. But I feel like part of it is sort of being a tease. When you think about Book One, it was like Morpheus's quest,
yeah,
and it was really ineffective. He was the central character, and all this stuff revolved around him. And I think that he pulled that back in the next two books to where he's in the background and he's mysterious. And I think that that just sort of adds to his mystique. It makes him more effective as the mysterious godlike entity. But when we see Brief Lives and, you know, to a lesser extent, Season of Mists, those are the stories that humanize him. Those are the stories where we get a little more in his head and we see what he's feeling.
Yeah.
I think you need both in the series. I think both serve different purposes, seeing him from the outside and from the inside. I think if every story was like Brief Lives, where he's palling around with his sister and, you know, they're going here and they're going there and they're doing all this stuff, it would feel too small.
You think it would have improved with more consistent, with, like, let's say, in one artist per arc, like it was setting into at the near the end?
Without a doubt.
Yeah.
I mean, the first, even Season of Mists is pretty horrible looking. It didn't really start to improve until Brief Lives. And I think they still did everything they could to ruin it. I think Jill did some gorgeous art, and I don't know. I think they tried. It just the pieces didn't come together.
But overall, still very good. It's very, and like you said, it's very interesting seeing it change and seeing Neil Gaiman develop. You know, he's like, you know, one of the top writers in the world now,
mm-hmm.
and it's interesting to see it him work. And develop and change and experiment.
Yeah, he did do some experimenting. He wrote about cats.
He did write about cats. Not a big fan, actually.
So, still so shocked.
I know.
I'm glad that you're not cat-tarded about it, but...
Well, I mean, I don't know. It just... whatever. Any other comments?
I don't think so.
No.
I'm a bi. How many times have I made that joke?
I don't know.
Too many. And it's still funny because we're both dumb.
So that is the end of our Sandman retrospective, folks. Hope you enjoyed it. We probably won't be covering an isolated series for some time.
I know. Let's read something stupid.
Yeah, I think next week we should do like a year-end best of for the segment, at least, you know.
Okay.
Award show. Yeah.
I like it.
I think we can do an award show for
that. Sounds exciting.
We don't have to read anything. We just revisit things we looked at over the year. We can, you know, give our thoughts on best and worst of.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever.
I know who your worst is, and I know who my best is going to be. It's going to be the same guy.
Would his name be Steelhead?
He just might be.
Oh, God.
Oh.
I fucking hate Steelhead. Oh my. I hate Steelhead.
He loves you. He loves you with his poet's heart. Or his warrior's heart and his poet's head.
Yeah, whatever he's got. Whatever combination of shittiness.
Whatever stupid shit's going on in Yodorowski's mind.
I can't imagine. I literally don't think I could. But anyway, folks, that's all we got for you this week. No quiz shows at the end of this one.
No fancy pants craziness going on here.
No, we're just... Let it sit there in the Sandman.
Mm-hmm.
Hush, silence.
The Sandmans.
The Sandmans.
Read your Sandmans.
Read your Sandmans. Anyway, this is episode 33. We are the Handsome Boys Comics Hour. You can find us at handsomeboyscomicshour.com. You can find us on Twitter at HBC Hour. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/handsomeboyscomicshour. You can find us on Tumblr, handsomeboyscomicshour.tumblr.com. Email us at handsomeboyscomics@gmail.com. Please, any of those places, Like us, subscribe to us, leave us reviews, leave us comments, send us stuff. We like to see anything. Suggestions, you want us to read something specific, let us know. We might take you up on it. You can find
Robbie
me.
Robbie will tell you how much he hates it.
It's also possible if you suggest anything called Forever Evil. You can find me on Twitter at Mixmaster Serial, MixmasterCereal. Same thing on Tumblr. Eric, where can they find you and your things online?
You can see my portfolio at freewillunlimited.com. You can see most of the other things I get up to online at ericzgoodnight.com. And you can tweet me. My Twitter handle is Mr. Bad Example, spelled M-R Bad Example.
So, folks, until next time, have a good one.
Rock and roll. I'm a farmer.